From the Algoa FM studios here in Gqeberha, I'm Caroline Kelleher. Welcome to the Big C podcast series, an initiative of this year's Algoa FM Big Walk for Cancer. The series is all about empowering us with knowledge as we engage with top oncologists, surgeons, researchers, and other healthcare practitioners to help us gain new insights into this all too common disease. The series also features survivors who bravely share their cancer journeys with us. The first episode is titled Cancer 101, and with me in the studio is well-known clinical oncologist Dr. Kathy Walton. Doctor, welcome. It's a privilege to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. Please call me Kathy.
Okay, there you have it, from the horse's mouth. Kathy, it shall be. My other guest is a social worker, childhood cancer survivor, adult cancer survivor, and a former patient of Dr. Walton's, Karen Brunt. Welcome.
Hi, Kathy. So it's my pleasure to be here as well.
Okay, and you're going to have to call me CA.
Oh.
I'm not the doctor, although I wish I was. Okay, so the first episode, Cancer 101. Let's start with the basics, Kathy. Define cancer for us. Why can't we get a handle on it? It is all too common. And what are the most common types? Women, men, children.
So cancer is actually quite a complex thing. It's not as easy as what is cancer and a definition. One needs to remember that cancer actually comes from 100% normal cells. And I'm speaking specifically about adult cancer now. You're born with normal cells, and throughout your life, you are exposed to different things called triggers. It's not a single trigger. It's a multitude of triggers that affect those normal cells. As those triggers happen, the recipe of those cells changes, and eventually it becomes an aberrant cell where the body has lost control of it. And all it wants to do is multiply. So one cell, one tiny little cancer cell, will become two. Two will become four. Mm. Four will become eight. And so that cell multiplies, grows, and becomes a lump or bump. But because it comes from a normal cell, it has body DNA. And the body then loses control, and it cannot heal that broken cell. And that's why it becomes so overwhelming mm-hmm. and so difficult to treat, because it is from self. It's from the actual body.
So there is no way we can say, because we want an answer.
Absolutely.
We want, the layman wants to know what causes it, and we can't pinpoint it.
One can't pinpoint it. One can say the most likely, not causes, but triggers, the most mm-hmm. likely things that add to development of cancer. For example, exposure to UV light for melanomas, okay. different things that happen throughout a woman's life with regards to hormones can increase the risk of mm-hmm. breast cancer, but it's all about risk. And everybody has a different risk factor that can trigger a cancer in their body. Not all smokers get lung cancer.
Why?
It's because of you have to have a susceptibility to a specific okay. trigger that you're exposed to develop a specific type of cancer.
So would you say that it's something that you are born with? Because we talk about a genetic predisposition to a particular cancer.
You're not necessarily born with an abnormality in the general population. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily born with an abnormality in your genes, in your recipe. Some people are. We've got the BRCA gene, which is very common in breast cancer. Also, for that matter, male breast cancer, prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. The BRCA gene will lead to an increased risk factor, colon cancer as well. BRCA gene basically means within your DNA to be able to rectify mistakes in the DNA. Your body therefore can't rectify the mistakes, and you have an increased risk. You still need to be exposed to other aspects, okay. other triggers to develop the breast cancer. So it is more about an increased risk and a susceptibility, an increased susceptibility. Mm. But even with that gene, it doesn't mean you will get cancer, but it increases your risk by about 80%, depending what type of genetic abnormality you have. Karen, do you have a genetic abnormality within your gene system?
Remember, we did the test, yes, and it came back no.
All negative.
Gosh.
I actually couldn't remember while I was busy talking about it.
Yeah.
So that is also very unexpected, because you've had three different types of cancer. Yeah. So one would expect there is something there,
yeah,
and we couldn't find it. Often in medicine, and especially cancer, we haven't worked it all out yet.
Mm.
And there's continual research that's happening so that we can work things out. And every patient who's tested genetically, we actually keep in a database so that if something is found going forward, we can contact the patients and say to them, listen, we have found this. Can we test you for X, Y, and Z that didn't exist when we first did the tests?
Karen, let's bring you in here. Three types of cancers, starting with childhood cancer.
Yeah.
Share your journey with us.
Okay, we're going to start at the beginning. So I was 12 years old when I was first diagnosed. Lump on my knee. Just started out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there was like a month or two that it was unexplained, tried to doctor it with ointments and things, and it didn't go away. So eventually, after biopsy, it was determined that it was osteosarcoma. And then I had to go on chemo. 12 years old, started chemo. I think I was diagnosed in May. And then by November, I'd had a knee replacement and the cancer was gone. So I was cancer-free at the end of November of 1997.
And psychologically, as a child, I cannot begin to imagine being a 12-year-old and we dread hearing the words, you've got cancer. As a child, what did that feel like?
I think it felt worse for my parents. For me, I just wanted to get back to school. I was oblivious. I think I didn't have enough information also. I didn't know what I was up against.
Mm.
So that ignorance actually helped me, because I didn't know how big it was. I didn't know what it could actually take your life at the time.
Mm.
So for me, it was just like, this needs to pass now. I can't be stuck at home. My friends are outside playing sport and going to school. I need to get back out there. So only when I was diagnosed 20 plus years later again with breast cancer first, then I realized, wow, how much you can actually lose, what you're actually up against.
Mm-hmm.
So as a child, I was shielded. I think my parents shielded me from a lot of the noise. And back then, it was also, like you say, taboo. You didn't really hear the word as much.
Yes,
so it was a shock to, I think they experienced it worse than I did. I was shielded. I went through the treatment. I cried a lot because the treatment was horrible. So I used to beg my parents, take me home, I don't want to be here. And I just had to go through it. So that was 1997.
And then the breast cancer diagnosis, that must have been a huge shock.
Yeah. It was.
Explain, how does it feel to, because for somebody, I mean, Kathy, telling a patient that you have cancer, what does it do to you?
When I was diagnosed again in 2023, it was actually my worst nightmare. Yeah, because I just thought I was done with it. I already paid my dues, I had it, and it's not coming back. And I mean, 20 plus years later, would expect it. So for me, it was, I can't believe this is happening.
And was it a lump that you discovered? And at what point did Dr. Walton, did Kathy become a part of your team?
Okay, so at first, my GP found it. We went for the mammogram. I found it. Went to the doctor.
Were you having regular mammograms, or
No.
Too young?
I mean,
they say, Kathy, is it not at about 40 you should start having mammograms?
Yes. No, I never had a mammogram before. And because I was so far in remission already, I didn't even have regular checkups for screening and those types of things.
Can I quickly come in here? Sorry, Karen. Just talking about that, there are certain risk factors that we would actually do mammograms or MRIs of the breast much sooner than the typical 40 years of age.
Okay.
And one of those is actually childhood cancer.
Oh.
Because the drugs that we use in childhood cancer to treat childhood cancer are prone to cause DNA damage, and therefore we bring in mammograms. If one's breasts are too dense, we rather do MRIs of the breast or at bare minimum ultrasounds of the breast from about 15 years after the diagnosis and treatment of childhood cancer with specific drugs. So, you know, we often, as GPs, I was a GP for 10 years before I became an oncologist, one forgets those extra little risk factors and get the patients to actually start with the screening sooner, because then the diagnosis happens sooner. Sorry,
okay.
Karen.
So I didn't know that. Yeah, but when I met Dr. Walton, she actually said that the drugs previously used might have caused, be a contributing factor. So it was a large lump. It was large. I think it was almost as big as my fist.
Gosh.
And it was something that you couldn't ignore. It wasn't painful. It didn't bother me besides being there.
Mm-hmm.
So put it off. I put it off for like a month or two. And then eventually I went to my GP and I said, okay, I need to go for a scan. Went, and then it came back as fibroadenoma. That's now a benign tumor or benign lump. And then my GP said, okay, we're going to remove it anyway because it's in the way. It's not supposed to be there. It's foreign. It needs to go. So he actually referred me to Dr. Toma, who I feel is absolutely amazing. He read the report. He saw that it was benign fibroadenoma, and it bothered him. And then he started investigating. He did almost 3 to 4 biopsies, 2 or 3 biopsies, and then 1 MRI. And all of the results came back different. So the one said no evidence of disease, and the other one said suspicion. There's suspicious cells, and then the other one said can't see anything. So it was quite mysterious. In the end, we discovered that my tumor was encapsulated.
What does that mean, encapsulated?
Okay, doctor.
So it was what we call a ductal carcinoma in situ, which means it hasn't infiltrated the adjacent tissue yet.
Okay.
But it's growing rapidly, and it's actually, when you have a tumor, it's pushing out the normal cells. It wants to overtake those cells.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as it decides, hang on, I'm now really angry, it starts sending its little spider webs into the adjacent normal tissue. And then it becomes much more aggressive and can actually spread much easier at that stage. We want to diagnose when it's still encapsulated, if we can.
Mm. Yeah. So as they explained it, it's the tumor and then it's in a cocoon.
Okay.
That's how they explained it to me in the beginning. It's in a cocoon. It's in the middle. So by the needle biopsies that was done, you would poke past.
Yes.
Past the capsule. And that's why the surrounding cells didn't give us a diagnosis.
Ah.
And at the fourth one, when we actually did the lumpectomy and could dissect the whole thing, it was found that it was this encapsulated cancer. But I'm always saying Dr. Toma was amazing because he didn't give up. Another doctor might have just said, okay, it's fibroadenoma, let's just leave it, or it's not worth it. But he just pushed, and after that diagnosis, I met Dr. Walton. He actually referred me to Dr. Walton because then his part ended. He was a surgeon, that's where his part ended, and it was actually stage 0. I still had to have a mastectomy done, double mastectomy, because the rest of the cells, or the what?
Mm-hmm.
What was it called?
Mm.
Yeah.
Rest of the
precancerous
breast.
Cells, yeah. There was precancerous cells in the rest of the breast, and that would have increased my chances of getting it back. So doctors advised, let's just do a double mastectomy, and that's what we did.
And then you are clear for how long, for what period of time before the third cancer?
So what happened was we had the mastectomy done. I was still in recovery of the mastectomy. I actually had a little bit of complications with the right breast because I did reconstruction at the same time. So there was complications at the right breast and infection, and I was on antibiotics and lots of things. So one day, this was now, surgery was in August of 2023, the double mastectomy. And by October, I messaged my doctors to say, look, yeah, I just had a bloody stool, but it wasn't a normal bloody stool. It was, it's like red in the bowl. So I don't know if it's because of the antibiotics that I'm on or because of all the trauma my body went through, but it didn't feel right. So again, Dr. Toma called him and he said, let's check it out. And he started investigating again. And then Shem, I feel so bad for him because he's always the one that has to give the bad news. And November, I was diagnosed again with colon cancer. Same year, few months apart. And then on the 1st of December, I had, what was that? They resected a part of my colon, which was, it was so in a position that it could be taken out easily. And it didn't affect my quality of life. I don't, it doesn't bother me at all. Mm-hmm. And a few weeks later, I was done with that and I was on the path to healing. But because of the stage of that tumor, I still had to have 3 months chemo that started in January.
You speak about it so calmly. I cannot. Sorry, but I just cannot begin to imagine what to have that cancer diagnosis again after the. Kathy, is there any explanation for why the colon cancer?
I wish I knew. Mm-hmm. I just, as Karen has said, I thank a surgeon who perseveres and looks for. I always say, you know, if you've got a sixth sense, if it looks like cancer, no matter what all your results are saying, go and look, go and search a little bit further, think a little bit further. This is a young lady who's got a huge mass. It, why would it just be something normal? Yes, fibroadenomas happen, but they don't happen suddenly. They don't happen out of the blue. So go search. So thank you for Dr. Toma for doing that. Mm-hmm. Thank you for reacting to Karen's phone calls to say, I've got a bloody stool. Not just taking it lightly and saying, oh, well, it's probably piles or something like that, but saying, you know what, you've had two cancers. The risk that this could be something else is there. Mm. And the fact that with the colon cancer, she needed chemotherapy thereafter shows that it wasn't just a simple, easy remove and it's all over and done with. It came very quickly. You know, one can always say, well, perhaps the fact that she was in the system and could be evaluated very quickly and treated very quickly prevented the colon cancer from spreading, from going further, from spreading into organs. But yes, I must say, I was always flabbergasted by Karen's calmness with regards to one diagnosis after the next.
Amazing.
And just, you know what, this is part of the process. And yeah, I can really take my hat off to her for how she managed the diagnosis.
Where do you get your strength from? Because there are so many going through similar, you know, diagnosis as you've been through. Where do you get your strength from, Karen?
As an adult, it's been my husband and my children, really.
That support time, system, which time, is vital,
absolutely,
isn't it?
At the time, my baby girl was 4 years old, and she was the light. She is the light of my life. So, she came home every day. I was like, "Mommy, are you feeling better today? What can I do to make you feel better?" And at one point, I just decided this child is trying so hard to make me feel better every day. I just need to feel better now. So I decided to just fight this thing. And because I had been familiar with cancer before, I knew it started in the mind. The fight actually starts and is won in the mind first. So if you decide that you are going to fight this, then half of the battle is won. And then obviously your team of doctors that say to you, phone me anytime, or, you know,
like
if you're uncertain about something, just ask. Yeah. You can phone, you can WhatsApp, you can send a message. So that is so vital as well, so that you can, you know, the relationship where you can feel free to say, look, yeah, this doesn't feel okay. Even my GP, I'm so blessed with the medical team and with my support structure at home. My husband and my children were amazing. They so are. And some people don't have that. Some people, like, marriages break up.
Yes.
At the diagnosis.
That's right, yeah.
I can't say that nobody has a perfect family, but you are living life and carrying on. But you have, like, financial problems, or you have a child with a behavioral problem, and you have social issues. And then a cancer diagnosis comes on top of that.
It must turn your world upside down.
Yeah. And then there's this quote that says you only you have problems until you have a health crisis, and then you have only one problem.
Yeah, you don't have anything if you don't. You can be rich beyond measure if you don't have your health. You don't have anything. Kathy, can I bring you in here again? Let's talk now about detection. Early detection. And I think you also, in reading your biography, you are a great believer in educating ourselves, empowers us. And would you say that we are so fearful of a cancer diagnosis that sometimes we'll have something that niggles and we go, I'll just leave it. And then it's too late. So let's talk detection. What cancers can we screen for? Because I think there are some that are far more difficult to... Is it pancreatic cancer that's really difficult to detect?
Very non-specific signs with pancreatic cancer. And this is the thing. I always say and try and reiterate, get to know your bodies. Get to know what normal feels like for you, because it feels different for all of us. All of us are individually and beautifully made, but it means that we don't follow textbooks. So get to know your bodies. That's number one. Teach our children to understand and know. Girls from a young age, feel your breasts. Get to know what your breast feels like. Because if you feel a change and that change persists, something's got to be evaluated. Rather sit back and laugh about your anxiety or your over expression with results with regards to something, rather have a mole cut out before it becomes cancer than wait for a cancer diagnosis. So get to know your body. Sometimes it's easier because you can see a big black mole, or you know your freckles on your body and suddenly you notice change. Sometimes you'll feel a lump or a bump. But sometimes, for example, with pancreatic cancer, colon cancer, it's growing there without you even being aware. Having heartburn, you think, oh, it's just heartburn. Having nausea, you think, oh, it's just nausea. It's going to go away. And especially us females, you know, there's so much going on in our abdomens and our tummies, we tend to ignore those symptoms. If something persists, get it evaluated. Yes. Nausea, heartburn, back pain can be signs of pancreatic cancer. So if it persists, get it evaluated. A cough. You go, you think you've got a bronchitis, you think you've got a flu, you go to your GP gives you antibiotics, it doesn't get better, you go back to your GP, different course of antibiotics. Sometimes you get frustrated, you go to another GP. They can't help the fact that you've been on three courses of antibiotics if they don't know that. But if you have been on three, four courses of antibiotics and the cough is not getting better,
something
have a chest x-ray because something has to be wrong. It doesn't always mean it's cancer, but have the chest x-ray so a diagnosis can happen. For example, let's say you've got heartburn. You repeatedly have heartburn. GP gives you proton pump inhibitor to inhibit the acid production. Heartburn continues. Get a gastroscopy. It doesn't necessarily mean it's cancer, but for example, an ulcer. If that ulcer is treated, it probably won't lead to cancer, but an ulcer that's non-treated predisposes one to develop cancer because it's an abnormality. So it's very important to get to know your bodies, know how your body feels, and if you notice a persisting change, get it evaluated.
Kathy, can we take a moment to talk about men and prostate cancer? Because all the men in my life, I'm not going to have that done. I'm not doing that test. I'm not. And prostate cancer is one of the ones, isn't it? If early detection?
Absolutely. So with early detection in any cancer, the earlier you detect, the easier the management. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, oncologists actually like that. We like being able to manage things quickly, easily, and it's also great for the patients to diagnose early. So yes, men, please have your prostate checks. Please have your PSAs done at bare minimum and have them done regularly, because then you can actually see a trend. Once again, it's about change. So you start with a baseline PSA and then you monitor. And if you see, but hang on, it's going up, once again, it doesn't necessarily mean it's cancer, but there could be other problems there that you can have managed early. And that itself can actually prevent cancer. Okay. But other than that, let's go to the testicular cancer. Feel your testes.
And like a woman has to.
A woman has to feel their breasts and get to know the breasts. But often breast cancer is diagnosed by men on women. And so why can't women diagnose testicular cancer on their partners?
Right. Yeah.
So it takes a family, a community to help with early diagnosis. Right. Talk about it. Talk about cancer. Talk about, have you been for your mammogram lately?
Yes. Because education is key. And I know this is something that you are passionate about. Educate yourself. But also, Karen, you were saying when we were off air that educate yourself, but don't be obsessed.
Yes. It can get out of hand fast. So, yes, it's good to know what's out there, what to look for, but don't go paranoia on it and just think cancer, everything is cancer, because you need to have quality of life. You need to love your life without having to think everything is suspicious. Yes, be aware, but don't be paranoid. Right.
Remember that common things occur commonly. So bronchitis is much more common than cancer. So absolutely, not everything is cancer, and not every symptom is related to cancer.
What are the symptoms of prostate? Is it getting up to go to the bathroom?
Yes. So we call it nocturia, so repeated frequency at night of having to get up and go to the bathroom for men. Struggling to urinate, so struggling to get the urine out. And something we call post-micturition dribbling. So you go to the bathroom, you think you've finished, and then suddenly a few dots and spots come of urine. Yeah. So that's basically the early symptoms. And if you get that, it's also a common symptom in prostatism. So it's not necessarily cancer, but if you get that, it's saying go and have it checked out.
So we can establish that it's vitally important that you know your family's history, isn't it?
Yes.
Because there are genetic predispositions to certain cancers. I have my father had colon cancer, my mother breast cancer, so obviously I have to screen for those. So can we talk screening methods and treatment?
Absolutely.
Treatment options that are available.
Yes. So the importance of screening is, once again, that these tests allow you to have a comparison. So however the screening program is, depending on the cancer types that you're looking for, you will be guided according to what the protocol is. Breast cancer, we should have mammograms from the age of 40 once a year, for example.
Right.
And the aim of that is to recognize change within the images. If you recognize change, you can then say, okay, let's have a look at what this change means. Once again, it doesn't necessarily mean it is cancer, but it's important to have it checked. So there are lots of different screening methods for different cancers, and your GP should be able to guide you with regards to what you go for when. Your surgeon, if you're having a colonoscopy or a gastroscopy, will then be able to say to you, everything is fine with your age group, with your family history, come back in 5 years' time or come back in 3 or 2 years' time, depending on what your circumstances are. And it's very important to go for those tests. Often I find patients say they went for the blood tests and all the blood tests were negative. One cannot diagnose cancer, our solid tumor cancers I'm talking about, not hematological malignancies. You cannot diagnose it on a blood test. Yes, PSA might guide us, but we call them cancer markers. You cannot diagnose. Even patients with cancer might not have a raised cancer marker. So, once again, if we as oncologists are looking at cancer markers, it's a way to measure how our treatment is working.
Okay.
The treatment of the cancer. And only if that cancer marker is raised can we use it as a modality to monitor our treatments. So you also asked me a little bit to mention a little bit about treatment. Once again, early diagnosis, we can often just get away with surgery. We don't have to do anything else. Thereafter, an oncologist will always put you on a follow-up and a monitoring program, which one really should attend to. Often one is put on a program. For example, melanoma is one of those programs where we say, okay, come back every 3 months, have your skin check, go for mole mapping. Once a year, have chest x-rays or CT scans, depending on the stage. And it gets quite boring because you think, oh, I'm going to a doctor and I'm doing these tests again and I'm not seeing anything. But I always say to the patients, if you are in that percentage where it's going to come back, and melanoma is a very, very aggressive disease, but it also hides away. So if you are that patient that you find, we can do surgery. We don't need extensive treatments. But there are a wide range of treatments that one can use, and not all of them are toxic. Any treatment, even a Panado, can cause side effects. There's chemotherapy, which everybody knows about. Not all cancers need chemotherapy to be treated. There's radiotherapy. There is immunotherapy, which helps stimulate your own immune system to actually fight certain types of cancers. There are vaccines that we use in cancers. So there's a very wide range, anti-hormonal treatment for certain types of cancers. But it all depends on what cancer there is and how to treat it. So years ago, 20, 30 years ago, we would throw chemo at any cancer and hoped it worked. Nowadays, with the way research is going, it's absolutely astronomical that we are developing new ways of treating cancer, less toxic.
It's good news.
Each cancer is very specific. The genes of each cancer are very specific. And we really are going into the genetic analysis of what makes a cancer tick. And if we can find out what makes it tick, we can actually manipulate that to be able to treat it that much better. And then our treatments work better because we're targeting that specific cancer in its specific way, targeting its food that our body is giving it to grow.
So, Kathy, what about the cancers, the silent cancers, where you don't have any symptoms and then suddenly you get told you have... What can we do? Is it just, you know what? The luck of the draw.
It sounds terrible, but it is very much the luck of the draw. But that's when, once again, you need a very good team behind you to guide you. And the word team is very important when dealing with cancer. It's not just an oncologist making the decisions.
Yes.
And the patient is number one of the team. And in order to actually be part of that team and make decisions that are the best for you as a patient and not the best for the cancer. So what I mean by that is you are not a cancer diagnosis. You are a patient. You are a person who has cancer. I, as an oncologist, a surgeon, can advise you what we know as far as studies and research, and we can give you the data. But ultimately, you are the patient. And as long as you have the education to know this is what is advised as far as science and research is concerned, you can make the best decision for yourself. And then the medical team has to support you in that decision and guide you, modify our protocols, modify our guidelines, and treat you as a patient. So there is a lot that can be done. Just because you have cancer doesn't mean you have a death sentence. Mm-hmm. It might make you realize, sure, death is out there. But often one will evaluate the stage of the cancer, the extensiveness of the cancer. I always say the best treatment of cancer is cut it out, if you can. Mm-hmm. If cutting out means you're going to leave part of the cancer behind, then you're not cutting out for cure.
Can we just dispel a myth here? Because, you know, lay people would go, oh, you know, and then they opened up. But when they did that, that was when it all spread. Mm. So you say the best thing is we need...
So basically, that is a myth. Mm. Cancer is not going to spread because you opened up. Sometimes what we do is we try to get rid of what we can see because that's causing the symptoms. And we know we're not necessarily going to cure. Sometimes we can't see it in totality on CT scan or MRI or PET scan. And when the surgeon opens up, they realize that it's more extensive than they originally thought. Mm-hmm. And then they would just close up and oncologist comes into being to help either with something we call neoadjuvant chemotherapy. That's chemotherapy that's given before the definitive surgery. And definitive surgery is trying to get it out. So we reduce the volume of disease with neoadjuvant chemotherapy, sometimes also with a combination of neoadjuvant chemo and radiotherapy to decrease the size of the tumor, the volume of the tumor, and then the surgeon will come in and cut out the remainder part of the tumor. So it's really a team effort and analyzing the tumor, following guidelines and advising our patients. It's not always surgery first. Obviously, we get information from a biopsy, which diagnoses the cancer, and then we have a look at staging. Then we have a look at what is the best way to reduce this risk of cancer spreading, coming back, either more surgery or chemotherapy or anti-hormonal treatment, then surgery, or the main surgery and radiation. So it's really about understanding your enemy before you fight.
Right. And then, Kathy, I'll use my father as an example. He was also no early diagnosis. He had been suffering had symptoms for quite a while, didn't tell any of us. And then when he did, it was too late. And he was told that he had a year to live. Sorry. And they were right, almost to the day. But I kind of go, to give somebody a death sentence, as it were, is that still something that is done, that you tell the patient, we reckon you have this long to live? Because I just kind of feel that's, how do you feel?
So different oncologists will have different answers to that. I feel that when the diagnosis is first made, there is so much information that patients and their families need to know.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. And as you say, it's not just the patient, it's the whole family who are trying to absorb the shock of having their loved one receive a cancer diagnosis.
Absolutely. And then you start talking about management of the cancer and its choices, their choices involved. And especially with stage 4 cancer, you want a quality of life. So together with I tell a patient, I believe in being real. I believe in being upfront with patients about the battle that they're going to fight. And they have to decide whether they're up for it or not. I can also judge a very elderly person who's not fit, not well. I can kind of say, this is the treatment, but I don't think you're going to do well. It's the quality of life you're going to have as a result of our treatments is not going to be worth the fight. You're having a good quality of life right now. Let's stick to focusing on the quality of life instead of focusing on on saving life, prolonging life. Yes. That's not our job. Our job is quality of life. So as far as the you've got 1 year to live, you've got 10 years to live, whatever the case might be, I believe that I'm not God. Yes, I know the cancers, and I can see when a person is deteriorating. So I can say, listen, now's the time that you've really got to focus on yourself, focus on quality of life. Have you had a death conversation with your family? Have you told them what your aim is? I think often people don't talk about death because it's taboo. But instead of just talking about it, getting it over and done with, and then living your life, people fear death. Families fear death. But if they know it's under control, the will has been settled, everybody is happy, you have said to your family, I want to die at home. You have said to your doctor, I want to die at home. Then we can help that. Whether it's 3 months, 10 years later, we can be part of that treatment, part of that aim, part of that goal for that person. Once again, if you dealt with the death discussions, it's dealt with, and the focus can go back on living one's life as well and as goodly as you possibly can.
Have you ever had a miracle where somebody, you've seen the scan, you've seen the tumor, and somebody says, I'm going to pray on this, and then you have another scan and you go, tumor's gone. Have you ever had that experience? You know, one reads about it.
Absolutely. So I always say one of the greatest blessings in my life is I see survivorship every single day. People hear the bad news of cancer. And I am absolutely blessed of being reminded every single day that miracles happen. I definitely see it.
So good to hear.
And it is incredible when you have those stories. Mm. And it's incredible when I say to patients, I don't know why, but you shouldn't have survived so long according to the science. You know, and yet they're going on and they're having quality of life.
Yes.
So that's part of it. We don't know. You know, how can we play God? We don't know the full extent of cancers. We're discovering new things about our bodies, our healthy bodies, and we're also discovering new things about cancers. So, you know, as I say, I see miracles every single day. The survivorship I see. One hears the bad stories. People tend to talk and harp about the bad stories, but there are so many good stories.
You know, this is such a, it's a complex topic, and it's an extremely emotional topic as well. And I think we could sit here and talk forever. But so in closing, Kathy and Karen, okay, I want to ask you two questions. Do you think in the future, and if we take AI into consideration, where do you think you know, our search for a cure is going, and how do you feel about Dr. Google?
I spent a great amount of time studying, and Dr. Google can't give you the nuances of a patient sitting on the other side of your table. So although Dr. Google is often right, but he's often wrong because often people are dying just because they've got bronchitis. So everything needs to be taken in context. Your research that you do on Facebook and internet needs to be taken in context. And then to remember the nuances of your patient. Everybody is different. Patients don't follow textbooks. Dr. Google is data that's put in, and yes, the most likely is X, Y, and Z. As far as AI is concerned, I'm a little bit of a technophobe. So I know my technology, and then I kind of stay away from the modern stuff.
And yet you've done robotic surgery.
I know how that works. I don't know how AI works. But that being said, once again, you're sitting with a patient. Yes, we're treating cancer, but we're actually treating patients. And the patient's psyche plays such a role in how well they're going to do.
As Karen was saying, the battle starts in your mind.
90% of my treatment is what the patient brings to the fore as far as their psyche and their focus on a positive well-being. I can throw whatever whatever I want at a cancer, at a patient. But if their mentality is not positive, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
If they are convinced they're going to die, even if they have an early stage cancer, I have seen patients who die and they shouldn't have died, but they believe they're going to die, and therefore our treatment doesn't work.
Yeah. Gosh, eh? The power of the mind.
The power of the mind. And that's where I can't quite get it.
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
So that human.
That human touch.
Okay, so in closing, Kathy, key takeaways for anyone watching. What would you say are the key takeaways from our conversation this morning?
So for me, it is get to know your bodies. Prevention is one thing, but early diagnosis is of vital importance because then we don't have to use toxic medication. So get to know your bodies. Don't be absolutely obsessed with cancer because not everything is cancer, but get to know your bodies and have things investigated. Common things occur commonly, but so does cancer. So do your screening tests, notice changes within your body, notice color changes, pain, nausea.
If your family history.
Your family history, absolutely. If it persists, have it evaluated, have it checked out. And that's basically the most important.
Mm. And I would say that you would also advocate for good eating and exercise.
Absolutely. So keeping your body fit, well, and strong is also half the battle. Mm-hmm. Your body is a being that tries to heal itself. And when you have cancer, it is in a constant state of fight. It is also trying to get rid of the cancer, but it can't get rid of it. But it's fighting these abnormal cells. So if your body is fit, if you're eating well, and by well I mean fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, mm-hmm. healthy eating, a chocolate is not going to make a difference.
No.
One chocolate is not going to make a difference. But if you're eating an entire slab twice
every
a day,
night.
that is a big problem. So keeping your body fit, strong, well, healthy, staying away from excessive alcohol, staying away from tobacco, avoiding sexually transmitted diseases.
Yes.
That is all very important as far as treatment of cancer is concerned, as well as prevention of cancer.
Kathy, would you say, it's just a title on a new story that has come to mind, cancer is the new HIV epidemic. Would you say that's true? Because younger people seem to be getting diagnosed with cancer than ever before.
I don't know about the HIV epidemic because cancer's been going along for a long, long, long time. I think people have been in denial, so it gets used to get diagnosed very, very late.
Mm.
Nowadays, we are more aware.
Right.
So younger people are being diagnosed early. I must say, as I'm getting older, I'm seeing younger and younger patients. And by that, I mean in their 20s, in their 30s, with diagnoses that in the past we would never have known. As far as breast cancer is concerned, often young women have mastitis and they get treated for mastitis for months on end. It doesn't make sense that they would have mastitis and then it ends up being cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these different things that have come to the fore that we weren't really worried about 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay.
Now we're starting to realize and patients are starting to notice and be more aware of their bodies.
Okay.
So I think it's a combination of knowledge and a combination of the generation that let's do something about it.
Yeah. Karen, yes. Key takeaways?
Support. It's not something that you should be doing alone. Having family support, having a supportive community around you, reaching out to previous cancer survivors, people that have walked the journey. I remember when I had the mastectomy, my doctor didn't necessarily tell me about what would happen. You won't be able to wear this bra or that bra. But a previous cancer survivor who had gone through that would have the knowledge to say, look here, buy this or buy that. So familiarize yourself with people. Put yourself out there. If people reach out from wherever, be open and ask the questions. The support is amazing. The support is actually so needed. It's such a lonely road if you don't have a team of support and good doctors behind you.
Kathy, Karen, I can't thank you both enough for being here. It's as I said, it is a complex and highly emotive topic, and I just so appreciate your time. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It's been a huge pleasure.
And in next week's episode, I am joined by dietitian Mary Ann Victor and biokineticist practitioner Chad Durham to unpack the impact of both nutrition and exercise that it can have on a cancer diagnosis, and to ask that all-important question: can it in any way decrease our chances of getting cancer? The Big C podcast series is proudly brought to you by Algo FM. Till next time, take care.